Council ready to proceed?
Yes.
Please.
May it please the court. Good morning. Matthew Combe on behalf of Thomas Williams, the petitioner. The issue before this court is whether there was sufficient probable cause to do a forcible blood extraction. This case stems from facts where a individual was on the side of the road by a motorcycle and he had a cut on his lip, blood coming from his mouth. The police responded. The police were dispatched and came to the scene and questioned him. There were no admissions. There were no witnesses at that time. And the officer who testified at a suppression hearing said that he smelled the odor of alcohol. And from that and the fact that he had a cut on his lip, that they requested that the hospital do a forcible blood extraction. It's our position on this application that there was insufficient evidence for the court, there was insufficient evidence for the police officer at that time to do a forcible blood extraction, and there was more information was required. This court has stated in the Entrekin case, which I think is directly applicable to the facts herein, that while our mandatory testing law, 291E21, does allow the police to take blood when there is a collision, injury to a party that's involved in the motor vehicle collision, and that there is sufficient PC for an enumerated offense in the statute. In the facts before this case and the evidentiary record, there's no evidence that there was a collision, or there's insufficient evidence that there was a collision. Additionally, we've submitted to this court that the odor of alcohol, which seemed to be the only thing which the trial court focused on as being an indicia of impairment, also is insufficient. Case law from the mainland has stated that the odor of alcohol alone is not something which can equate to impairment. Impairment needs to have facts such as operation or an admission on behalf of the party or a witness to the occasion that can say that there actually was some erratic behavior, there was some reckless or dangerous operation of the vehicle. There's no evidence in this suppression hearing. There was no evidence deduced.
Excuse me, counsel.
Yes.
Ms. Coney says that Entrekin doesn't make any distinction between a collision and an accident. Are you making that distinction? You're arguing there is no collision here, so I'm just wondering if you're making that distinction.
I am not making that distinction. I have to concede that the Entrekin case talks about collision and about accident, but in the Entrekin case, it wasn't primarily at issue whether there was a collision, because it was undisputed by the facts. There was a car that had hit a guardrail. It was against an embankment when the police came there. There was clear evidence of damage to the vehicle. And I don't believe that there was a nexus between the driver and the vehicle itself. So collision could be inferred from the observation of the police officer at the scene. In this case, there was no such observation. There was no testimony by the officer of him reviewing the bike or looking at it and seeing anything. He does testify that there were no skid marks or debris on the road. Common sense might suggest that a two-wheeled vehicle, if it is going to go down, is going to leave some sort of markings on the road or some debris or some further injury because of the nature of the way the vehicle is.
Mr. Combe, does the record indicate the condition, where the motorcycle was, the condition of the motorcycle at the time?
The sole testimony of Officer Martin is that the motorcycle was on the side of the road. That is it. Admittedly, that is a vague description. In some testimony that he goes into after his answer to the prosecutor, he suggests that he walks off of the road, which I believe suggests that he's distinguishing between where the dirt part starts and the shoulder. But I have to admit to this court that his sole testimony is that the motorcycle was on the side of the road. And that in itself, we would submit, is the burden. I believe Entrekin said that the burden is on the prosecution to show that there's a specific and articulable facts. The reason being is because this is one of the few situations where the law allows the police to take somebody's blood without getting a warrant. And the protection that's there for an individual is probable cause. That there be a collision, first of all, that's that there be a collision with injury and some probable cause that another enumerated offense occurred. We're saying that there seems to be a paucity of evidence that there was a collision.
On that subject, counsel, I mean, obviously the facts of Entrekin are very different from those of the record in this case. I mean, there was no question in Entrekin that there was a collision, which is a statutory term within the four corners of 291E21C. Is there any ambiguity, do you think, in the term collision? In other words, what are the limits of where collision ends and non-collision begins, or the line of demarcation?
I believe there is, and looking at the term of collision in Black's Law Dictionary, it suggests that there is an impact with something else, as opposed to, for instance, somebody perhaps getting off of a motorcycle and hitting their lip into a mirror, or which would not be, well, perhaps it could be a collision with a mirror. But I think that the term collision in the statute suggests that the motor vehicle operator collides and impacts with some other entity, be it another vehicle, or be it the road, or be it a structure. And I believe it's applicable to this case because of the lack of evidence that there was a collision to something else. I don't think that...
So that a mere touching, if the motorcycle was placed on the ground, rolled over on the ground, whatever, we don't know, in the absence of any physical markings, in your view, is insufficient to constitute a collision?
That's correct, Your Honor.
The county makes the point that in Entrekin, there really wasn't any distinction made between collision and accident, and both terms were used interchangeably. How do you respond to that?
I believe they were used interchangeably because it wasn't at issue. And while...
If it wasn't at issue, why was it discussed?
Because, collision as being a necessary element to do a blood extraction, it needs to be addressed as far as the applicability of the statute at that time, because the district court judge had said it was vague and ambiguous, and this court wanted to clarify that it wasn't. And while I must submit and admit to this court that they do use the terms interchangeably, what was clear in that case was that accident did refer to the damage, that there was clearly a vehicle that was damaged here. There was personal property that was damaged, a guardrail, and the embankment, which was hit.
The state sort of makes the argument that it just doesn't make sense to draw that fine distinction if we're talking about someone being injured in an incident in which alcohol is involved. At least in their briefs, they seem to make that argument. And what do you think about that?
I believe it's not applicable to a case like this to the Williams case, because what we don't know, and because they didn't ask the questions here, is what, how did this injury occur? For it could have occurred, he could have been hit by flying debris. Mr. Williams could have got on his motorcycle after being in an altercation with somebody and actually have stopped afterwards. Whether, I don't think that this court or our law would say that solely because a person is hurt from whatever kind of accident, that the fact that they're near a motor vehicle, that that would entitle the police to do a forcible blood extraction. I think that that would weigh too heavy on the side of police power and not enough to our protection of individual rights, something that this court has affirmed over and over again is an important thing. Balancing it with, of course, the law and the state's need to enforce the laws for the community.
Counsel, the Intermediate Court of Appeals concluded from the facts and circumstances that apparently that on March 5th, 2004, Williams suffered a 1-inch laceration to his lower lip when he lost control of his motorcycle while driving down Halicala Highway and fell to the ground. When Officer Martins approached Williams for his driver's license, registration, and insurance cards, Officer Martins could tell that Williams had been drinking by the odor. You indicated that the trial court really relied on odor of alcohol.
Yes, Your Honor.
The ICA apparently relied upon the other evidence.
Yes.
Including the fallen motorcycle, sitting 15 feet away, the odor of alcohol and the laceration through the lip, and concluded that this is what happened. Couldn't you look at the evidence and say the reasonable inference is that, drawn from all of the evidence, not just the odor of alcohol, that what the ICA found or concluded was appropriate, amounted to probable cause?
I would respectfully suggest to this court that a deeper inquiry would be needed because of the obligation of the state, given that this is a blood extraction which is taken, it's a Fourth Amendment, it's presumptively considered improper unless there's probable cause and exigent circumstances, and that requires a deeper inquiry into the record. The trial court who made this decision focused solely on the odor of alcohol and said that that was the issue, whether that sole indicia, and the court acknowledging on the record that there were no other indicators, no statements, no bleary eyes.
Did the district court make any finding of fact at all with respect to loss of control?
No, it did not. They did not, Your Honor.
Judge Hamili relied exclusively, that asked for briefing, didn't she, on odor of alcoholic beverage as the sole evidence of driving while impaired.
Yes, Your Honor. Just one clarification. Judge Paul Horikawa, who is a per diem judge, was actually the judge that was sitting at the time of this hearing. And Judge Hamili was there at sentencing and took the conditional plea. Yes, Judge Horikawa said that the sole indicia of intoxication was the odor of alcohol, and he had some trouble and questioned whether that was enough, acknowledging on the record that there didn't appear to be anything else, and saying that the evidentiary offer at this motion to suppress was different than what he had expected or what the parties had alleged that they were going to produce. This is a case, admittedly, where
does the trial court's determination, as you indicate, Judge Horikawa was finding that he focused on the alcohol as the basis of probable cause. Does it prevent court on appeal, Intermediate Court on Appeal, to look at the entire record to see what the total totality of circumstances were to determine probable cause?
I must acknowledge that the Intermediate Court of Appeals can look at the record. I believe it's a de novo review of probable cause. We would urge this court to review that because, as briefed in the paperwork, that they made assumptions which aren't borne out by the evidence. And while they have made a conclusion about what certain facts say, they're not borne out by the testimony of the parties or the facts that are in record. And there still would be an issue. Pardon me. There's an issue as to whether there was an impaired operation of this vehicle. With the odor of alcohol, we would submit that they need something more. There needed to have been an admission or witness testimony, or that they have done some field sobriety tests, or that there was some recognition of more than just the odor of alcohol.
Could you be able to argue that normally you aren't going to find someone with a cut lip 15 feet away from a motorcycle that's lying on its side in the middle of the street?
I'll agree that that could be argued, but the burden would still be on the state, the prosecution, to develop sufficient evidence because of the fact that this is a forcible blood extraction, and it's done in the concept that there's exigent circumstances, they need to get this evidence. But before they can get it, they need to have sufficient facts to show that.
To get a warrant, all you need is probable cause, right?
Yes.
And in this case, the statute sets out probable cause as the standard, doesn't it? So the statute does not in any way contradict the essence of the warrant requirement.
No, it doesn't. If the court has no further questions, I'll defer at this moment. Thank you.
May it please the court, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Peter Anano, County of Maui, appearing on behalf of the State of Hawaii. The issue here is, as counsel stated correctly, whether or not the police properly follow the requirements of HRS 291E-21. Under that section, what's required is, one, that a person be involved in a collision resulting in injury or death, and that there be probable cause for, in this case, an OUI under section 291E-21. Under 291E-61, a person commits the offense of operating under the influence of alcohol or an intoxicant if that person operates or assumes actual physical control of a vehicle while under the influence of alcohol in an amount sufficient to impair the person's normal mental faculties or ability to care for the person and guard against casualty. So basically, that's what is required. PC that the person committed the offense of, in this case, OUI, in addition to the person being involved in the collision and having an injury.
What was the evidence of the collision?
The evidence of the collision was, as the state sees it, is basically the fact that the defendant admitted to the officer that he was driving on the road, fell off his motorcycle, and the collision would be, I guess, the impact that the motorcycle had with the road.
I'm sorry, did you say that the police testified that the defendant admitted to what you just indicated?
Actually, there was no testimony at the hearing that the officer testified to that, but according to the record, it's undisputed that the defendant made that statement to the officer. And that is,
I fell off my motorcycle?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually,
what record are you talking about if it wasn't adduced at the hearing?
Yes, I'm referring to the record on appeal at 11, and that's declaration of defense counsel. subparagraph 2A where he puts in his declaration that, Officer Martins also noted in his report a statement from defendant providing that while driving down Halekula Highway, he lost control of his motorcycle and fell to the ground, stated that's all he can remember. In addition to that, the state also put in their, alleged in their declaration, I guess, as part of the motion, that Officer Martins, and this is record on appeal at 20, Officer Martins, by statements made by the defendant, determined that the defendant was traveling west on Halekula Highway when he lost control of his motorcycle, collided with the pavement, and overturned on the highway. So I think that's where the ICA is getting, you know, those facts from. And you know,
was that ever testified to?
That was never testified to. However, because the record, basically, based on what I just cited, you know, it appears that those facts were undisputed because the defense counsel alleged it, and so did the state. You know, this court has previously allowed undisputed facts to be considered where on appeal, where you know those facts actually didn't come out during the hearing.
What was the declaration attached to?
You're referring to
the declaration that you just referred to of defense counsel and the prosecuting attorney. You said on the record on appeal at
right.
You just didn't submit the declaration. Was it attached to a motion or a memo?
Yes, Your Honor. As far as the defense counsel's declaration, that was attached to the actual motion to suppress. And I think for the state, it was attached to the state's memorandum in opposition to the defendant's motion to suppress.
Purposes of trial counsel, was there any stipulation between the parties that the defendant lost control of its motorcycle and fell to the ground?
No, Your Honor. There was no formal stipulation.
Was there an informal stipulation?
Not to my knowledge. Other than, you know, what I just cited to. I mean, there's an
declarations attached to motion memorandum in support of motion to suppress and memorandum in opposition to motion to suppress, all of which was water under the bridge as of the time trial commenced.
Well, I think the issue is whether or not, you know, those statements were disputed or not. And I guess that's why we have a hearing, is for the trial court or the motions court to determine or resolve issues or disputes of facts. In this situation, there's no dispute because defense counsel put it in his declaration, you know, alleging that those are the facts.
I mean, well, to draw an analogy to a civil matter, it could be that in the course of discovery, a witness might testify in a deposition that he made a particular statement, and the fact that he made the particular statement might not be disputed. But if that deposition is not used at trial, I mean, if that testimony does not become part of the record, of what significance is it that there was no dispute that the witness made the statement?
I agree with that. If it's not part of the record, then it can be used. In this case, those statements
were part of the record. It's not part of the evidence at trial.
I see.
Is that right?
The hearing.
But would an ordinary person reading this statute come to the conclusion that when a bike falls down, that that's a collision?
To an ordinary person?
Yeah, when somebody falls off a bike and the bike hits the ground, is that a collision?
To an ordinary person, maybe not. However, based on State versus Entrekin, I think, you know, it becomes an issue of whether or not, you know, an actual collision, so to speak, is required.
In Entrekin, was there, I'm sorry, a collision with some other object?
There was, I mean, yes. Yes. Okay. And I think maybe the ambiguity is that in Entrekin, the court did use the word accident versus collision. And
separate and apart from the matter of collision, there were certainly reasonable minds could not differ on the evidence adduced in Entrekin that there had been an accident. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree.
The word accident nowhere appears in 291E21C, does it?
No.
The statute requires a collision.
Right.
So we're back to what constitutes a collision?
Again, you know, it's arguable that there was a collision in this case because the motorcycle collided with the pavement. The other issue there is, you know, whether or not the statute is ambiguous. And
is there any evidence of any scratch or abrasion to the motorcycle?
None that the state could see in the record. So what I was referring to basically is that if there's an ambiguity, which it appears there might be, then I think this court, you know, previously has looked at the legislative intent behind the statute. In this case, like in Entrekin, the state noted that cases involving injuries with that involves operations of vehicles, the operator should not be excused from, well, the police should not be precluded from getting evidence from the operator just because, you know, the person gets injured and then seeks medical treatment. And that's what happened in this case. Because of his injuries, the police weren't able to conduct any kind of field sobriety or anything like that, and the appellant was transported to the hospital. So, you know, in line with the intent of the statute, the state's position is that, you know, we should look at the legislative history or the intent in deciding, you know, in construing the term collision. And that's what, you know, our position is on that issue.
Mr. Ha'ano, as Justice Okobo pointed out, separate and apart from the fact that memoranda and attached declarations have been filed, the state still has a duty to comply with the statute, well, to adduce evidence at the hearing that would fulfill the requirements of the statute, including probable cause and collision. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So is there evidence in the record at the hearing that a collision occurred?
If you're asking that, if there's direct evidence.
What is the evidence?
The evidence is basically, you know, aside from appellant statement, was that.
No, this is, I'm asking you, so at the evidence at the hearing. There was evidence of a statement at the hearing?
There's no evidence of a statement
okay.
at the hearing. So I guess it would be, you know, a reasonable inference that okay. there was a collision or he did lose control and fell off his motorcycle.
What was the evidence at the hearing that Mr. Williams operated the motorcycle?
There was no direct evidence of anyone observing him actually on the motorcycle. I think what the trial court looked at was the totality of the circumstances. The officer arrives on the scene. He sees the appellant 15 feet away from his motorcycle. There's nobody else around. Officer asks for the paperwork. Appellant hands over a driver's license, insurance, registration. So there's a reasonable inference that, you know, he's the only one there. He hands over the paperwork. And, you know, so there's a reasonable inference that he was the operator of the motorcycle. And that's what it is. You know, whether or not this court agrees with the reasonable inferences, I guess is not really the issue, because deference should be given to the trial court when resolving issues of fact. It's not, you know, whether or not there's a reasonable inference that could go the other way, because maybe it could. But I think the question is, you know, what the court found, and I think deference that should be given to what the court found.
So do we know what the court found beyond what it wrote in its April 8, 2005 order?
There's no specific findings of fact or conclusions of law other than that order. I think the order just said, based on Officer Martin's testimony, the reasonable inferences therein, and the record and file, the court makes the following findings and determined that there was probable cause. So there are no specific findings of fact or conclusions of law.
Counsel, the yeah. motion to suppress, the hearing on a motion to suppress and the trial, were they heard on the same day?
Actually, there was no trial. There was just a motion to suppress.
Okay, and the testimony that was given by Officer Martin,
Yes, Your Honor.
That was during the motion to suppress?
That's correct.
Okay, and these declarations that were, they were accepted during the motion to suppress?
State doesn't believe that they were accepted, but they were filed as part of the court record. State does not believe that there was any actual entering of the declarations or the motions as part of the hearing.
Counsel, I'm looking at the district court's April 8 order. The court finds that Officer Martins had probable cause to arrest the defendant for DUI. Further, that the defendant had significant injuries that justified the forced withdrawal of a blood sample, referring to the statute and state the Entrican. So the court is making a finding with respect to significant injury, I take it the 1-inch laceration to the lip. But where does the court make any finding at all regarding collision?
In this order, there is none. In the order.
Well, there was a request for findings, and that was withdrawn.
That was withdrawn, actually, yes, by the defense.
You know, in the Boomer case, the Boomer court says, well, everybody knows that a motorcycle is harder to operate than a four-wheel vehicle. So that loss of control of a motorcycle is not that much of a rarity. And so you cannot infer from the fact that from just the odor of alcohol and an accident involving a motorcycle that the person operating the motorcycle was substantially impaired. What's your position on that?
The Boomer case is pretty close, admittedly, to the facts of this case. I guess one of the differences in that case is that there's no indication of what caused the accident. You know, versus like in this case, we have the defendant saying that he's driving down the road and he just lost control.
Well, we sort of agree that that wasn't in evidence, right?
Right.
Okay.
The other thing about the Boomer case is that there was testimony about some kind of sparks that were observed before the right before the accident. And, you know, whether or not that contributed to his accident or the collision, you know, that might be another factor that might cut against, you know, the fact that there was...
Although appellate court set that aside.
Right, okay. Right. Okay. And the other thing with that is, it's unclear as to, in the Bruno case, as to what their DUI statute really requires. I don't know if, you know, they have a requirement that, as an element, that you got to prove that it was a certain amount, or versus like in Hawaii, we have if you're substantially impaired where you can't guard against casualty and care for yourself, then that would be considered under the influence. Other than that, I think the Boomer case, you know, it's persuasive authority. It's from another jurisdiction, but I don't know what to say other than that.
You know, if there's any legislative history on the reason why the legislature said collision?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I mean, you looked and there wasn't any.
I couldn't. I mean, the Entrican case is very detailed as far as, you know, the statutory interpretation or the legislative history. I'm not aware of any specific reason why they put collision versus accident. I don't know.
Well, I mean, what was really at issue in Entrican was whether a collision resulting in injury could include a collision resulting in injury to the driver and not to a third person. That was really the issue in Entrican, wasn't it?
I agree. It was a different issue. Yeah.
So the statement that I read from the ICA's summary disposition order concerning their determination that Williams suffered a 1-inch laceration to his lower lip when he lost control of his motorcycle while driving on the highway and fell to the ground. You believe that comes from those declarations that you spoke of?
I really couldn't say, but if I had to venture a guess, I would say yes.
Is there any other possible source?
That statement is pretty specific. So, you know, I unless there's something that they're seeing that I don't, I would say that, yeah, it probably comes from the declaration.
And this was a statement supposedly made to Martins from the defendant. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you agree that it wasn't admitted to evidence?
I agree.
Thank you.
So what the state is asking this court to do basically is to uphold the Intermediate Court of Appeals decision as well as the trial court's decision based on all of the facts and the reasonable inferences therein that there was probable cause for an OUI as well as a collision that resulted in injury to appellant.
With respect to the ICA's decision and whether we should affirm it or not, if the ICA was relying in its recitation of its take on the record on the contents of the declarations that were never admitted into evidence, was the ICA engaging in its own independent fact-finding?
The state doesn't believe so, and the reason is I've done some research on this issue, and in one particular case, and I don't have the site, I have the name of the case, Mokoloa Village Development versus Kauai Electric. In that case, a reviewing court was not confined to the trial court's express finding of the fact, but could also consider uncontradicted evidence contained in the record in considering whether or not the elements of promissory estoppel were made out in the action by a real estate developer for reimbursement of costs of installing underground utilities. And the state doesn't believe that it's improper for this court or even the ICA to do that because of this, you know, these cases.
Assuming no quarrel with that proposition in the abstract, what uncontradicted evidence was there in the record, evidence in the record of a collision?
Your Honor, speaking about the evidence at the motion to suppress?
That's the only evidence we've got, I gather.
Okay, if you're referring to just that evidence, then I would say it would be, you know, there's nothing direct like the defendant's statement.
We've got the fact that there's a motorcycle on the surface, and the only person in the vicinity of the motorcycle with a lacerated lip.
That's correct.
And the odor of alcohol.
Yes. I mean, there has to be some way for appellant to sustain the injury. You know, there has to be a collision with something. You know, whether or not, you know, he fell off the motorcycle and hit his, you know, face on the ground, or motorcycle hit him. You know, arguably that would be a collision.
Collision has to be between the vehicle and something else, doesn't it?
I'm not too sure if that's what the statute requires. I mean,
you think we could construe the statute so that it does not require that the vehicle be involved in a collision?
That would be, yeah, I don't think so. But I guess, yeah, that would be kind of a stretch, but I think, you know, I mean, like defense counsel said, I mean, he could have collided his lip with a mirror, and, you know, I mean, if that's considered a collision, then that would be fair game. But like Your Honor said, you know, that might not be a reasonable interpretation.
If I'm the operator of a motor vehicle and I've been drinking and I suffer a heart attack while operating the vehicle, I begin to feel chest pain. I stop the vehicle. After I've stopped the vehicle, I have a full-on heart attack, and I die, and my face collides with the steering wheel. Is that a collision?
Could be.
For purposes of the statute.
I think it's unclear. Whether or not this court is going to adopt that interpretation, you know, that's another matter. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's all I have. If there's any other questions,
thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Does the court have any questions? I know there's been a lot of inquiry into the different, I think, facets of this case, and I don't want to belabor the issue with the court. I would just say, from the factual paucity or our position, that there wasn't enough facts, that there were, for purposes of a collision, there was no debris admitted by the officer, no skid marks. The testimony was the bike was on the side of the road. Testimony wasn't that the bike was on the ground, but it was on the side of the road. I would submit that if it were on its side, that there would be damage to it, or there would be some other indicators that isn't in the record. There's no testimony from the police officer about damage. There's no pictures. There's no description by the officer. There was no testimony of any indication needing to tow the bike because there was anything wrong with it. As to operation, there was no testimony. Was the bike warm? Was it running? Was the headlight on? Who had possession of the keys? How long was the motorcycle there? Was there anybody else in the area? There was no question. Was there anybody else here? Hypothetically, Williams could have been out picking pineapples or looking to pick pineapples and tripped and fell in the field. And he comes back with a cut on his lip and he sits next to his motorcycle. With regards to the statement that is alleged, that the police officer alleges is made, while it is allowed into evidence as admission if it were admitted, specifically the factual record here, he was asked, and he says, I don't know, I don't recall. My understanding of trial procedure is that it's a typical procedure to offer what is said, but that doesn't mean it's a stipulation or agreement, because actually defense counsel, I was not the defense counsel, defense counsel is challenging that. He doesn't agree with it, and they're moving to suppress it. So I think, well, not to engage in supposition, I don't know how the ICA made that determination. I never came to the conclusion that it came from an affidavit or anything attached to a motion. I don't think it would be proper to consider, because it is in evidence, and it wasn't submitted in the record, and the state had sufficient and ample opportunity to explore that area, and they didn't do it.
Are you saying the declaration was merely a recitation of what the officer would have said or should have said at one point, but not an endorsement of whether that was accurate or not?
That's correct.
Mr. Combe, you mentioned just now he was asked. What were you referring to the police officer, I assume, when he was on the stand?
Yes,
what were you referring to when you said he was asked?
I was referring to that the police officer was specifically asked what was said by the defendant, and he says, I don't know, I can't recall.
Okay, thank you.
As far as, I would submit to this court that I think it's a far stretch to say that a collision would include a person hitting the vehicle that they're in, and I think the collision would, the connotation from that, the meaning would be colliding with something else. That there's property damage, there's damage to the vehicle, and damage to something else. Lastly, I would say is the impaired operation, which is they needed to have a collision from which injury occurred, and probable cause at an enumerated fence. There'd been some proscribed action here. And the combination of those things is what gives the state the right to do a forcible blood extraction. But in this case, they only had the odor of alcohol. There was no, as I stated earlier, evidence of operation. And as I had also said earlier, no evidence of impaired operation in the sense of admissions or third-party witness testimony. I saw this, or the officer's field sobriety tests or any kind of testing done that would indicate evidence of other factors that suggest impairment. Because of these things, we would ask this court, my client, Petitioner Thomas Allen Williams, would ask that this court vacate and or reverse the reverse the ICA's decision and remand it to the district court with instructions to enter the motion to suppress and to withdraw the judgment. And if there are no further questions, I thank the court on behalf of my client and myself for your time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court will take this matter under advisement.